You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
What is up, Goat Flippers? It is your host, Lurk. Thanks for checking out this episode of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast, the best metal and hardcore podcast there is on the interweb. If this is your first time checking out the show and you enjoy the content, definitely think about subscribing or following the show and give us a rating or review if you have the option to on the platform that you are listening to us on. All those things greatly help out the show's reach for the podcast algorithm stuff and all that good stuff. And on this episode of the show, we have two YouTubers that make up the band Termina. You may know these YouTubers if you're a metalcore kid and you follow guitar stuff or vocal stuff. You may know Nick Nocturnal from his YouTube channel and Andy Sizek from his YouTube channel. And he also plays in a couple other bands, and he did some other things on the internet as well. However, both those guys make up Termina, and they are YouTubers. And this is the second time we've had some YouTubers on the show. You may remember we had Adam22 from the No Jumper podcast on. So it's pretty cool that we're kind of branching out a little bit. Visit lambgoat.com for everything metal and hardcore related. Make sure you're following Lamb Goat on social media. Give us a like on Facebook, and you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Lamb Goat. Head over to Lamb Goat's YouTube page, and you can see all of these episodes in video format, as well as other Lamb Goat content. Make sure you hit the subscribe button and hit that notification bell so you're always alerted when we upload new episodes or content. If you're listening to this episode of the podcast on Spotify, take a second and search Lamb Goat on Spotify, and you can also find all of our music playlists. And you can find me, Lurk, the host of the show, on Twitter and Instagram at LurkCity. That's LURKCITY. Hit those show notes, and you can find all of these links in the description already. Let's roll.
Oh, yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh, yeah, this is stuff. Oh, no. Lamb Goat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
Welcome to the Thunderdome, guys.
All right.
What is up, Goat Flippers, Van Lammers, whatever you want to call yourselves. I have no idea what I'm trying to make stick.
Goaters.
Lamb Goaters, Van Flippers. Van Goaters, Lamb Flippers, whatever. But anyway, here we are back once again with the incredible me, Lurk. No, I'm just joking. But I am joined today with two dudes that are a little different than our normal situation. However, not as normal, not as unnormal. See, this, the beginning is always fun.
That's okay.
So here we are. I'm joined with Nick and Andy. Nick is a YouTuber. Andy is also kind of a YouTuber, but also in a couple other bands. But you both are in a band bringing you on here today, and that is Termina.
Indeed.
Yes.
Nice. So I guess what we'll, you know, funnel down the rabbit hole of how did you guys even connect? Because was it via the internet? Because, I mean, you guys, I know Nick have been doing YouTube. That's where kind of we connected about, a, you know, a couple years ago or whatever. And then Andy, you just said you're like a horrible YouTuber, but you're in a couple other bands, so you know you're. Yeah. I don't know how long you've been YouTubing, but you guys have over 100,000 each. I know Nick is a little more than that, but Andy's about 100,000 or so.
Yeah.
That's no small feat. I know you got the plaques,
thanks,
so
man.
It's cool. But yeah, how'd you guys like link up and how'd that start?
Go ahead, Nick. You take that one.
I'll take this one. All right. So yeah, we both linked up from the YouTube side because we were both doing covers. I saw his covers like here and there, you know, modern kind of metal or tracks and whatnot. And I'd be like, oh, who's this dude? And then he would like do the clean parts and ace it. And I'll be like, okay. And then he'd do the screaming. And I'd be like, how does that noise come out of that boy? You know, like, and he would do like the mirror covers. And I'd be like, what the, like, it would shock me because I would just hear him cover like Dance Gavin Dance. Mm-hmm. And then he's covering a mirror after. I'm like, Jesus, okay. And essentially just one day, I don't know if you remember that track from First to Last came out, Make War.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think it was that one. And I did a cover and so did Andy. And I was looking at YouTube. I was like, who is this other dude that did this so fast? You know, cause that was trying to be my thing at that time. I was like, you know, I'm and try to be that fast dude that always gets it out and
pump out content.
Yeah, all the new bands. And Andy did so fast. Like, who the fuck is this guy? You know, I saw his cover kind of here and there, and that's really it. And then I added him on Facebook to kind of like keep an eye on him and keep him close. And then he messaged me. He was like, dude, I like your content. And I was like, oh. And that kind of took me for a stumble because I didn't expect him to be so nice.
Yeah, yeah, because he spite added me. That's what happened.
That's what
spite added me. And then I messaged him being like, dude, your shit is so cool. And he was like, oh.
That's cool.
This is going to be like a war.
Yeah. So, you know, but that, you never know what you're going to get yourself into on the internet, unfortunately, you know? So.
In this case, it was fortunate.
Yeah. And
did you know that he was kind of spite adding
no.
you?
No.
Okay.
No.
No, I didn't know this shit till like 6 months to a year later. Like, he finally told me.
Yeah, I was like, Andy, I'm such a dick, by the way. But if you didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, we were just friends, like, right off the bat. And I told him I admired his videos, and we started collaborating from there.
Yeah, yeah, we did Linkin Park Heavy was the first cover, and that went surprisingly well. And then the big one we did, which kind of made us both, I think, realize, like, oh, this is something special, was Post Malone's Rockstar metal cover. That was something special.
Yeah, kids really seem to like that one.
Dude, yeah.
Well, I think anything with Posty is going to, you know, hit with the younger generation and some of the older generation, too, because he is so versatile, and he actually is an artist. Not like a lot
of
these.
The right time for sure. Right place and time.
Yeah, that's true. We got pretty lucky with that.
Yeah.
Ever since then, it was kind of history. Just we started writing stuff, and that became Termina eventually.
And you guys have an album coming out shortly here, right?
yes.
It's coming out like 5 days in the past, I think.
Yeah.
Like nice. Okay, well, by this time, it's been a month and 5 days in the past. So I'm way off now.
Yeah, it just dropped. It just dropped pretty recently.
Full album, EP? Because I know you guys have done some singles and some single tracks over the, you know, last year or so. So,
yeah, it's a full album, 11
full
tracks.
Length, baby.
No interludes, none of that. It's not super long. It's only, I think, 41 minutes, I think, overall. Mm-hmm.
Sounds decent. Like,
but it's a full album. And yeah, that was after us doing all the singles, just kind of dropping them, having fun, seeing what people like, seeing how we can get better. And we had to learn a fuck ton while doing this, like about each other, but also just about the process of like what this really takes to do it. Kind of
it was all DIY, you know. We sent files back and forth for like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, exactly.
That's crazy. Yeah, I was gonna say, like, how do you guys go about, you know, creating anything? Because you guys obviously don't live in the same place. It's only two of you. Granted, Nick, Andy, we both know you play guitar, but do you program anything else? Do you have anyone else that you kind of send those tracks off to get ideas from, or, you know, little riffs, or is it just everything you two, drum programming and everything?
It's us, yeah. So instrumentally, guitars are tracked fully because I'm actually a guitarist. And then drums and bass, that's full program stuff. And from there, I basically send Andy the instrumental. And he either is like, yeah, this is lit, or Nick, this is garbage. And either or is good, you know. And then he tracks vocals, does his thing.
Garbage.
Oh, thank you. and yeah, then Andy does his side, which I guess, go ahead, man.
Yeah. I mean, Nick has riffs on riffs, man, and he's got great sensibilities for songwriting and programming drums. He's a bit of a drummer, too. He'll send me instrumentals. I'll give him my notes. We'll refine it, and then I'll come up with vocals. I'll smash out some tracks, send it over to him, or we'll refine it some more. And then same thing with mixing. I'll give him my mix notes, and then he'll send it back to me. I mix in my vocals into that session, and then I master from there.
Yeah.
And we just keep going back and forth until, you know, we're as satisfied as possible.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I was going to say, when do you know that it's done?
That's the thing, man. Sometimes you just have to, like, let go, because there's always, I mean, when you spend a long time meticulously editing a project, there's always going to be something. So at a certain point, you just have to be like, that's good enough.
That's it.
Yeah, that was something at the end, too, where we were like, okay, like, we need to get it out. Because it's like, if not, we're going to spend another year, literally.
Yeah. I definitely took my time, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. So, I mean, like, the album took a couple of years to write, going back and forth between the YouTube. So, Nick, do you do anything outside of music other than the YouTube situation? Or, I mean, I know you've done, like, collabs with other people in this project, but do you play, like, locally with people in your area at all, or have you?
Not at all. I am very out of tune with my, you know, Toronto area scene. I have no idea what's going on here, what the bands are. I know like a few because they're just actually because they're YouTubers usually is the only reason I know about them. but I'm very out of touch with that. And no, it's, I mean, the thing with Andy is his main thing term. And other than that, of course, it's like my Nick Nocturnal solo stuff I always kind of have been writing with. I also am, I'm in Either Breather. That was more recent, which was like a fun join out of nowhere. And, I'm also doing little fun projects just with YouTubers and other solo stuff. But no, Termin is definitely like the big, big thing that I spend most of my time with musically, at least.
That's awesome. And shoot, I literally, there's a toss up of what shirt to wear on this podcast because, you know, got to look cool on the YouTube. The other one was Kyle from Brand of Sacrifice sent me a long sleeve. And that's a Toronto band. That's a band I'm sure you may or may not know about, but they're
pretty dope.
Brand's awesome, man. Yeah. They're home.
Love Kyle.
I love those.
Love
dudes.
Brandon.
Yeah, I still have to write him a thank you for that fucking shirt. I wanted like I want to have a photo, and I'm thinking, oh, thank you. You know, yeah. he was cool to have on the podcast too. Although I'm partial to Canadians because I'm also half Canadian. So.
You know. Dude, all the YouTubers, man, it's crazy.
Like, bastards.
We're all Canadian. I don't know why. I'm sorry. We have nothing else to do up here. I guess that's basically
it. A lot of snow and a lot of cold. But hey, you know what? Yeah. It's like perfect weather for like half the year.
For half the year you can be happy, and the other half you can be not. It's my favorite.
Yeah, you're in snow, and you know what? I find a lot of bands and it could just be because when I find out they're Canadian, I'm attracted to them more often. But like a lot of bands that I follow and a lot of bands that I followed for a long time are Canadian too. Like, you know, Misery Signals and Alexis on Fire. And then of course the list goes on and on and on and on and on. But yeah, it's big for me.
It's weird. Yeah.
The Heroes Canadian, right? I think so.
Yes, they are Canadian boys. Oh, dude, trust. I have not went to a show and met somebody who likes music that has said they hate Protest the Hero. It's impossible. Them.
Oh, I love
Alexis. Them. Is a big one too.
Yeah.
Those two are probably like just Toronto, especially like they love and Silverstein actually as well.
Counterpoints is kind of close-ish.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just, if you're Torontonian or you're Canadian, you don't like those bands, it's over. Like you're just not a part of, you go to America, get out.
Well, I'm in Florida. So I heard about,
I used to be a Floridian.
Oh yeah. Whereabouts?
I lived in Tampa for a few years.
Same here. What time, Frank?
It was last year and a couple years previous. That's from Bakari. Bakari's all from Florida.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. That might be why they were somewhat familiar. The name was somewhat familiar.
But I'm back in Maryland now. So.
Cool deal. Death metal. Big death metal thing. Big death metal area up there. Well, so is Tampa.
Periphery. Periphery's from around here, I think.
Full of hell.
Prog metal, usually, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Full of Hell's there. Jarhead Fertilizer's there. We had David on the podcast. They're from there. I don't know. They have like the Death Fest. So I just assume they also really death metal.
You're right. Maryland Death Fest, yeah.
Tampa's also a death metal capital, too. But I lived there for a hot second, early 2010s for like 5 years. So
it's a good hardcore scene, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How is, speaking of scenes and stuff like that, how is it for you guys separately currently? I know, Nick, it's non-existent basically for you up there, but what's it like in Maryland? And I hate talking about COVID stuff, so if you're listening to this, I apologize, but, you know, it's documenting the times. What do you want to say?
What's it like as in what context?
Like, do you guys have shows? Is it like starting to have shows? Anything
no
like
way.
That?
Okay. Not that I know of, man. I mean, at the very most, there might be some like bar band performances somewhere. I'm not going to them, but there's no tours happening or the scene's not back.
Nope.
Dude, yeah. No. We have a stay-at-home order here.
Yeah, no, that's why I said you were not. I didn't ask you the question.
It's fucked here. Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. It is super crazy. And the only reason I say it's super crazy is because obviously I've talked to, and I've said this on the podcast before, so I apologize. But I've talked to bands throughout the pandemic and before the pandemic, and I probably will do after the pandemic. But the thing that I find out that find most fascinating is how different it is for every person that I talk to. Because I also live in Florida, and obviously if you've seen any of the memes for the last whatever how many years, Florida is kind of wild. And so, you know, we've been, I try to tell people, we've been wide open forever. It feels like we were always wide open, other than like the first month of this whole situation. So now, yeah, we have like shows. I'm going to go see Newfound Glory Thursday.
Damn.
Yeah. Wow, really?
Yeah, so we've had shows and we have, yeah, we've got, I mean, that's the difference.
I had no idea. Yeah. Honestly, I didn't know.
Yeah, and it's so weird because I, you know, everyone, especially in the entertainment industry, and this is where I started like recently going like, man, I just don't understand. Because obviously everyone in the music industry and entertainment industry is like pushing for people to do whatever, A, B, C, or D. You know what I mean? Because they want to get back to their livelihood. They want to get back to quote unquote normal. But also, man, like some of those things when you're trying to get people, like some people don't want to do certain things. And so it may come across ill-willed or wrong. You know what I mean? So it's been really fascinating talking to people and finding out what it's like in their area and how it is. Because again, we've been like wide open. So it's just,
I can't even like visualize shows, man. Like we're on the stay at home order. And it's so crazy that like you could go to Costco and they actually have everything that's not food sectioned off with security guard. Like it's there, but you literally can't touch it. Like, or you'll get kicked out of the store. Wow. Like that's how fucked up it is.
We don't even have a mask mandate anymore.
You know, I was in Florida like a couple weeks ago and I mean, people were, I saw masks, you know what I mean? It still felt like the pandemic, you know?
Where were you at? Just out of curiosity.
I was in Orlando.
Oh, yeah. A little different. That's not
intense. That being said, you know, like, I know that Disney World is open and stuff. And
actually?
I mean, everyone's wearing masks, but yeah, all the theme parks are open.
What the fuck, dude?
See, that's what I'm saying. It's so crazy. It gets crazier as time goes on and the more people I talk to.
But yeah.
That's fucked, dude. Yeah. I can't even imagine that right now in Toronto. That's fucked.
It's going to be a while before, you know, everywhere else does stuff like that.
It's crazy. And again, I don't want to harp too long onto this because obviously there's so many different views that people have about what's going on. And, you know, it's a touchy subject, obviously. Plus, we've touched on it a bunch on this podcast. Right. So moving on. So how did you guys get into like heavy music in general? And you know, you don't have to answer at the same time, but you know, one or the other. But like what kind of got you down that road as far as like, you know, was it family, friends? Did you find it on your own?
MySpace. High school, MySpace, just scrolling through metalcore, MySpace, The Devil Wears Prada and Atreyu, Under Oath, stuff like that. Just being in high school journalism class, fucking looking up bands, basically, getting into it. I had a couple friends, not a lot in high school that also liked metal. Most of my friends were just like, you know, into like Breaking Benjamin and which I thought was cool. But I don't know. Once I heard like the screaming, there was just something about it that I had to keep going back to. At first, I was like, "What is this shit?" And then I was like, "Ooh, what is this shit?"
Yeah.
And you know, it just snowballed from there. I dove deeper and deeper. It was like, yeah, Breaking Benjamin, Avenged Sevenfold, Atreyu, and then I just
that opened the door. You can tell. Tell the progression because that kind of is how most people do. Obviously, like I was just floating around in life, listening to whatever my parents were listening to. And then middle school, high school, I started listening to like the alternative radio, which was like 311 self-titled album and some other, you know, that kind of alternative. And then, yeah, next thing you know, MySpace came around. And then like you, I was like, what is this fucking yelling shit?
Yeah. I think I heard the Devil Wears Prada, Texas is South on somebody's MySpace page. And it was just like, yeah. And I was like, oh, but sick.
Yeah. It was never, it was kind of crazy. Like I did not the Breaking Benjamin thing, but I did like, you know, whatever band was fucking cool on the butt rock time to Slipknot, and Slipknot into like, for me, it went from like Slipknot to Hatebreed. And then there was a local band here locally, Evergreen Terrace, that was also doing some things when I was younger. And so, yeah, Slipknot, Hatebreed, Glassjaw, and I guess Evergreen Terrace kind of just like kind of thrusted me in there. And then once you get used to the screaming and the weird heaviness and everything, it's like, oh man, everything else just falls to the wayside.
Yeah, it's weird even trying to think in a person that doesn't like metal or doesn't listen to metal's perspective once you've listened to it for so long. Because I had that same experience. My cousin would put on like Under Oath or Alexis on Fire, and I'd be like, what the fuck is that? Like, what is that Satan noise? What is wrong? Why is he in pain? And I was like 9 years old.
Yeah, that's Satan noise.
Yeah, and it would fuck me up. And you just keep listening to it, and you're like, this is normal now. You know, and it's such a weird transition. And then you go to show like your non-metalhead friends metal, and then they still have that same reaction. Like, what the fuck? And then it's like this foreign concept now.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah.
You know what's funny is that like growing up, I would be like, what the hell is this? This is weird. How is this music? How are people like so into it, making a living? And then like I started like listening to it and being like, oh, I get it now. This is sick. This is everything. This is the truth. And now I'm getting older. I'm going back to like, what is this? Like people making money off of like these mouth noises. Like, what am I doing? Like this is so weird. Like, you know, it's kind of like, I'm starting to look at it in a cynical way.
Well, like from a different viewpoint as an older individual who, cause I mean like even when I was in high school, which was, you know, not that long ago, but even when I was in high school, it seems very far off that any band that was remotely in the scene, quote unquote, could ever like sustain a living. And not saying that all the bands do, because there's, you know, a lot of bands do not. A lot of bands, that's a passion project, and they work full time elsewhere, and they can only get off for tours certain times and whatnot. But
thankless.
Yeah. Mm. And I think Fear Factory is going through that right now, actually. They're having a, you know, issue with keeping the band afloat or the name afloat and all that other shit.
Sucks.
But, yeah, it's interesting how that works out. But, you know, it's those kind of people that enjoy it to listen to it, and they kind of understand that that's the plight of that artist. And it also takes a certain kind of individual to sacrifice, you know, X amount to focus on that style of music. Like, you know, like there's so many small niches of genres here or there that very few people will like, you know. So it takes a lot of dedication.
Yeah, definitely. You have to like ignore logic a lot.
I love that.
You just do. I don't know. You just eat it until something starts to look good.
But I think what I was trying to get at is like even back then, it seemed so far off. But even now, I mean, like now kids are playing video games on Twitch and they're making millions of dollars. People are playing their, you know, you guys are on YouTube and there's millions of people on YouTube. And they're, you know, they're creating passive income streams and all that other shit. And so it's cool that all these things are happening to where like maybe even in the future there will be able to have like more bands concentrate on things that are more within the avenue of music rather than like, okay, well, I've got to support myself and possibly my family or whatever. And now I can just focus more on this music thing because we have all these other street, you know, avenues to get money. And I think the pandemic really helped with that because I think beforehand, like a fan club or sign up for our Patreon or all this other shit seemed like very gimmicky, and bands were not really wanting to do that, you know,
But
yeah, now we have no choice.
Yeah, now that is that. Now it's normal, and so now I think that those now bands are seeing like, oh wow, there is a market for that, and a lot of people do enjoy, you know, watching fucking from their home.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a way to adapt, I suppose, and you know, I think that the way things are going is like, hopping on a record label and making an album isn't as feasible now. But having a side hustle and making an album, that is like more logical nowadays, because then you're not, one, buried in copious amounts of debt that you aren't recouping. And two, you know, once you do recoup, it's not like you're giving 80% to somebody else. You're, you know, that's something you've earned. Owning the rights to your music is really invaluable, in my opinion. Yeah. So having a side hustle fund your shit instead of a label, it makes a big difference. And being able to do YouTube and Twitch, all that stuff, Patreon, that's like the new way to me.
Dude, yeah. The virus, like, that's the thing. It's like it made, I always kind of like say the real musicians finally had to come to like the tubers zone in a way, because, you know, I feel like there was always that disconnect between like, oh, you're in a band, you know, like an actual musician, you're touring, like you're doing the hard hustle, that grind, right? And then someone says like, I'm a YouTuber. And it's like, wow, instantly, wow. Like,
well, there wasn't a lot of overlap. You're right.
Yeah.
And it's still pretty separate. I think, you know, a lot of like musicians and touring artists aren't online personalities like that, but more are.
They, especially because now, like, they're all on, a lot of them are on Twitch, and seeing them on Twitch, you can tell instantly the ones that are like kind of have that type of entertainment factor, not just like playing a show, right? But that type where they like entertain.
We had no choice.
Yeah, y'all had no choice. So y'all just came here, and it was like, well, the ones that can do it can do it, and the ones that can't just got to wait for the pandemic.
It's not for everyone, and that's fine too.
Yeah, exactly. But that definitely has intertwined kind of those worlds, and definitely has made a lot of musicians, I think about that multiple income stream. Because as a YouTuber, like things like Patreon, like that's old. You know, that's something like you started that 5 years ago. And I love seeing bands now being like, guys, this new thing, we are starting a Patreon with our band. And I'm like, yeah, like that's been around for a while.
Well, in their defense, I believe YouTubers know more about Patreon because it was invented by a YouTuber.
Fair enough. Yeah.
So obviously, you know, it's weird because like I go on YouTube for a magnitude of things. Like there's so many things that I go to YouTube for, whether it's watch your guys' content, watch other content that I'm subscribed to, or how to fix my drain, or, you know, something on my dumb car or whatever. So I'm always on YouTube watching some kind of content. What do you think it is, the disconnect between like artists that are already kind of somewhat established or in bands that, you know, maybe poo-pooed on the whole YouTube thing? Why do you think there is such a disconnect between those people? Or like for you, Nick, your following on YouTube is what, 400, 500,000? Subscribers or something, like wild number like that. That's a lot. You know, you can go to a lot of bands' Facebook pages, Instagram pages, or whatever, and they don't have, you know, nearly any of that. So what do you think the disconnect is, and why was it looked so down upon?
I think it was because somebody, like in the perspective of a band members, like we're grinding, we're touring, we're making real fucking music, which totally true, right? But why is this kid who's in his room that just did a stupid fucking meme just go viral and, you know, get all that attention that we are right now trying to do, actually grinding this out? Which is totally understandable, because I used to have that mindset too, you know, except in like, I'd be like, I have to do only guitar, like legit type content. And then seeing these meme people do it, I'd be like, what the fuck? You know, like I'm here trying to actually do like things that take time, and you have to actually have, you have to know your craft and stuff. And these dudes are just opening up a camera, making a funny face, you know, and exploding. So I think it was a lot of that mindset, which again, like I said, is totally understandable with that time. And it's like, yeah, well, what the fuck? They're doing like 1/10 of the work and getting way more rewards for it. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that was kind of that big disconnect before. And as people just kind of got used to it and got used to the way of like just modern entertainment, right? Like that's it. You'll see, like people will go viral in 1 second and have an entire career and be millionaires just from like 3 seconds of something stupid. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I think it's just become more accustomed to it. So it's not as much this like, you know, like what, you know, this, they're so fucking lucky, you know, any of that. It's like, oh no, they just they just basically played the modern game of, you know, the internet kind of.
Yeah, it's just like this whole side of the town that no one knows about existed, mm-hmm. and it's super popular. Yes, but only for that little niche part of town, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, it's exactly. But it is cool to see bands, people in bands create content. And like you said, when I first started like creating content for myself and my whatever, I was like, I'm never fucking posting memes. That shit is so lame. That's so not authentic. That's so fake. You can get so many likes from memes, and that's so, you know, I'm trying to get like real statistics and real analytics. But I'll tell you what, if I post a meme on a lamb goat, that shit hits sometimes. You know, that shit hits sometimes.
Lamb goat is a different place, though, than most parts of the internet, isn't it?
What are you saying, Ian?
I've been there, man. I've lurked for many a year, long before anonymous posting was outlawed.
That's a more recent thing, but I mean, yeah. We're going to actually come, it's coming back in a way.
Reviled forum returns.
Yeah. Oh, the forum is still there.
I know.
Yeah.
The forum's there.
What's your favorite lamb goat memory, Andy?
Sheetrock. Was pretty funny. If you remember people talking about Sheetrock for a while, there's like a copypasta about I don't even know. Some guy just like, I haul Sheetrock all day long, and just became like a comment. I really liked the blank is stoked. Frankie Palmieri is shocked. Yeah. That was a pretty funny one for a while.
Well, that plays off of his getting actually.
I know.
Electrocuted, unfortunately.
Lambesis goat. That whole saga was good. Defonce was really funny. Did you all these ring a bell?
Yeah. No, and then I mean, when we were talking about names for the podcast, I was like, Al, there's only one name that it can be, and I was like, it's got to be Van Flip, and he's like, and I was like, dude, that is like synonymous with the culture.
Yeah,
that Liam
got, I think it's great. Yeah, you're embracing the
negatives.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. I don't know. I always got a kick out of it. The first time I was ever mentioned on Lamb Goat, I was stoked. And it wasn't good. No, but I was like, yes, finally. I've always been a fan. I didn't really post, but I've always lurked and enjoyed the content, the comments.
Yeah, it takes some thick skin to get involved, especially on the message insane. Board. That's a whole different, that's a much smaller group of people, obviously, but
yeah.
They are dedicated, guys.
Yeah, man.
Dedicated. I mean, they've been there for years.
I know. It's crazy.
So now that we're back on the YouTube page kind of a little bit, how did you guys, like Nick, how did you start doing YouTube? Obviously we kind of touched on it. You were only trying to do like legit content, no BS, but you know, at one point you made like a silly video and you're like, of course it's my favorite. I mean, my most popular video now.
Yeah. That's literally, yeah, basically. And I mean, even legit content. And that's the whole weird thing about kind of thinking about, I don't know, the whole idea of like talent equals, you know, getting big or equals like you earn it, you know, like more than somebody else that is doing it in a less talented way, in a more entertainment way. But even that, like I was doing covers, right? Which is just fucking cover. I'm reusing somebody else's content in a way, right? It wasn't even like original, just writing from scratch. I mix some of that in, but even that, right? I would just do that basically forever, realize that I did it somehow fast. You know, people thought it was fast. I was like, all right, I'm just going to keep doing covers fast. And I kind of had that, got known a bit in that for like the YouTuber metal scene of the fast cover guy. Oh, a new song comes out. When's Nick going to cover it? I did that for a while. And then I was like, you know what? I'm sick of always relying on bands to release things for me to get content. So I'm just going to try to make my own thing and be a dumbass. And of course that video did better than anything else I did. And exactly how you described, I was like, all right, maybe this isn't so bad. And now I'm just a terrible meme on the internet.
Was that the Slavic metal one? No,
that was far into it, Andy.
Okay.
That took a while of ruining myself to get.
I mean,
to
that one did insanely well. That
still
one
my biggest video, and my content has nothing to do with Russia or Slavic
insane,
metal or
though.
Memes
you fucking,
in any ways.
Great video.
I think it's just because you kind of have that, you know, what is it? Eastern European look.
Because my background is Slavic. Like, my parents are like, I'm Canadian as fuck because I was born here. But like, you know, you go to the family gatherings and stuff. Like, you know, right? It's like, you get all the fun little stereotypes and it's awesome, right? So that's why it's like, I understand exactly all those memes and all those fun stereotypes. So I just threw it into a fucking video and was like, well, no one's, you know, done this kind of in this exact way. Why not, you know, further embarrass myself?
Genius. I've already done it.
It's always the self-deprecation that gets the best results.
Yeah, you know, it's true. I just started doing that and just not caring. And it was weirdly freeing in a way because I feel like, you know, if you're like an actual musician, like you want to be professional and you want to make sure that, you know, everything you release is like serious, basically, because you
definitely
want to
come
serious.
Across that way at least, right?
Yeah, exactly. Whereas I did such the opposite that it's almost freeing because I don't have to have that, you know, like, oh, this has to be like serious. You know, somebody might see this and, you know, whatnot. It's like, I don't care. People see this. They already know I'm fucking stupid. You know, like, let's just have fun with it and go for it. It's more so it's what people want to see at that point. Right. So if
less
that has
pressure, you know, when you don't take yourself so seriously.
Exactly. And I know Andy, when I met him, was a lot more serious too. He was like,
I still am. I mean, but I am and I'm not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's definitely memed up so much more over the years, and I'm sure I've slightly contributed to that. And I apologize, but I love it.
Yeah, bringing me out of my shell for sure.
But it's also good because then you can get those little like groups of people, like I don't necessarily know if you guys do these things, but like, you know, like Discord or Facebook groups or Reddit groups or whatever, and then they have like their own little environment within that where they all meme. You know, your content for you and stuff like that.
Oh,
so
exactly.
It definitely helps.
It's just easier because I can just be me no matter what. Like if I'm doing a video, I don't have to put on any kind of image in any way, right? For like a professionalism way. It's just, no, like you are watching me be a dumbass right now. That's because that's how I act as a human being, you know? And that in itself, I guess, is kind of more relatable sometimes to people. So they'll appreciate that. However, probably on the professional end, I'm sure so many whatever brands or bands maybe have seen that and been like, fuck, this is awful. What is wrong with this person? I never want to, you know, work with them or any of that. And I'm like, that's fine. I love that. You know, I'll do my own dumb shit thing of people who can stand me like Andy.
Hilarious. How long did it kind of take you guys to get, you know, your following on there? I mean, Nick, you've been doing it slightly longer, obviously, but Andy's relatively somewhat new. And you've got the silver plaque.
Yeah, right.
actually, I've been on YouTube since I was like 16.
Shit, okay.
17. I'm 28 now. So it was long, slow, and futile grind. Like I was like adding people as friends on YouTube doing Never Shout Never covers when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
Nobody cared about my YouTube until, I guess the Sumerian audition. Mm-hmm. I did a Sumerian, basically for background, Sumerian Records did a contest where they were like, we've got a super group we're putting together. We need a vocalist. Here's an instrumental. Everybody submit your auditions to this instrumental. And I did one, kind of late and it did really well on the internet. I didn't win the contest. It just did well on the internet. And then that's when people started paying attention. And that wasn't, when was that? Like 4 years ago? Something
Dude,
like
yeah.
That.
That was a while.
So I've actually been on YouTube for a hot minute and I don't know. I've never been that good at it, honestly.
Were you doing the same kind of content?
Like, I was just making covers.
Okay.
Yeah. Just covers mostly. And, I always used it as a tool to get my name out there because I wanted to be a touring musician. And it served that purpose because I was able to join bands. You know, I got the Macari gig and I got the Monuments gig because of YouTube. That being said, I've never really taken it super, super seriously. Definitely not on a release schedule. I put videos out very sporadically and rarely. Nick, on the other hand, he's a professional about it.
And I'm a professional dumbass, basically.
He actually does his job and keeps up with a schedule, and you know, there's a lot of success.
So basically you're saying you're part-time YouTube guy, Nick, you're full-time YouTube guy.
Yeah, no, definitely. I
barely work. Part-time YouTube.
I'm riding
it does
a Sumerian
not make
thing.
Me a lot of money.
So. Yeah, no, I went full on YouTube. Like I am a YouTuber probably before. I always want to pretend I'm a musician before anything because I mean I love music and I write and that's my that's why I even started YouTube. But I mean, there's no way I think somebody would like know me from Termina before they knew me from being a YouTuber and things like that. So
maybe,
it's like
maybe hey. Not. You never know.
Yeah, it's true. You never know. Maybe one day people will be like, "Dude, you're the guitarist from Termina." I'll be like, "Really? That's
how you know me." I think it's like I think you just have more for you. It's like more people know you from the YouTube spectrum and then music, and then for me, it's the opposite. You know, it's just a different balance.
Yeah, it's definitely that balance. But yeah, no, it's fun, especially because us coming together to do it together because we've had those different balances, and like I said, even like. Me somewhat being a bit more professional to match Andy's professionalism and Andy sometimes being a bit more of a dumbass to match my dumbassery and kind of finding that blend. Cause I don't think it's like you would normally see that combo of two people, like a real musician and like a YouTuber basically coming together to do dumb, like fun videos, but also then like an actual project, which is the Termina stuff.
Well, luckily we have you doing it because who else is going to make crabcore meme videos? So you know, I don't know who's going to do that. You're bearing the weight.
Somebody's
got
it, dude.
Yeah. So getting back into Termina before we forget all about it. So what if for someone who's never heard it, but may or may not visit your YouTube pages, what would like explain Termina? Other than, obviously it's just the group project that you guys have. Like, what's the sound? What's the influence from it? What's the goal and purpose,
I would say modern metal and then let Andy go with whatever actual explanation.
Me? Shit.
Go for it.
I don't know. Modern metalcore. It's not like we invented a new genre, man. Yeah. I think that we just put our own spin on what type of heavy music we like. That's how it is for me, at least. Like, it has hints of stuff that I like still about metal. It's got like some deathcore elements and some fun like metalcore, the Devil Wears Prada vibes, and maybe some more prog gent.
Yeah,
goodness. I don't know, man. If you like that stuff, you'll probably like the album. We flex hard on it, I think. We both try to like do the most.
Of course.
I go super high and super low. It's just extreme. It's extreme music.
It's basically that's the best way to describe it. Just modern metal because it has some metalcore. It's got all those modern core genres and then a bit here and there because me and Andy both listen to different stuff. Like I like listening to chill stuff. I also I grew up with some punk. I grew up with some fucking like post-hardcore stuff, but I also will throw on some Brand of Sacrifice, and it'll completely annihilate my day with stuff. And I think it's kind of the same for Andy with like Dance Gavin Dance, Fred Amorosa, but then also he'll throw on some Brand of Sacrifice. And
that's what it is. For everything from Breaking Benjamin to Brand of Sacrifice, which is kind of what we've been talking about, like how we got into music. And that's what the album sounds like. Basically, it's a spectrum between those two fields.
Yeah, kind of what a few bands are doing now, like Darko or like Spirit Box, even Load. Like they're just kind of doing that mixture of stuff. So it's not, just one thing that necessarily they're always kind of stuck in. If they release a chill track, it's not like oh my god, it's radio done, I'm done with this, get out. It's like, oh, this is their chill track for the album. It's more like, yeah, oh, and then here's their deathcore song that's the heaviest drop Z tuning I've ever heard, right? So I wanted to make sure that even just on the instrumental side we had that freedom because we like a lot of different shit and didn't just want to be this is just this. That's it. I know Andy has so much range and capability that he can do both so well. And I'm like, well, then we're going to fucking do both, and just make it work. And hopefully people kind of like the blend because there's a ballad on their song. And then there's also right after it or right before it, Desolate Spectre, literally a traditional deathcore song. And trying to make one track go into the other was definitely a fun challenge, but we tried our best to kind of make it work at least.
What are the tunings on the album? Because I know you are kind of infamous for like my favorite riffs in XXXX yeah. tunings. So yeah. Do you jump all over the board, or do you have a specific kind of area you like to stay in?
I have some go-tos. The regular tuning on the album is drop F sharp on a seventh string. Some of them are in drop G, some of the lighter tracks. And then The Edge of Time, which is the last track, is the only track that is on an eighth string as in drop E. But yeah, it's like,
honestly, you're an insane person, bro. You're like, oh, some of the lighter tracks are in drop G.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Dude, the new meta, I mean, it's modern meta. Like, the new meta for like tuning is like, if you're not at least drop E, you're basically a pop band. Like, that's just what it is. You know, it's fucking crazy.
The world has changed, man. I just remember discovering drop D as a kid. Like,
exactly.
Oh, shit. Dun, dun, dun. That's low. That's heavy. Now everyone's fucking in drop Z sharp.
They've got slinkies as strings and shit.
Not so, even slinky.
They're just so loose, man.
It's crazy. Yeah. And even that, it's like, I like probably for the next album, I'd honestly just do drop E. And even one of my favorite innovations is pitch pedals, because you can halfway through your song just be like, this is now in drop A0. You know, this is now inaudible at this very moment. You know, you don't even know what this is. Bass is gone. Bye. Right. So even just having that as an option, we do the same thing in our tracks. Like, even though most of it's drop F sharp, I just pitch pedal some of the breakdowns to drop C1. Why not? You know, why not just make it crazy and inaudible and stupid for the fun of it? So it's tuning is just so weird nowadays that it almost doesn't even matter. But there's definitely like that average, which is literally like probably drop F sharp is the higher range, but drop B is going to be within this year probably is going to be the new average tuning of metal bands are using.
Yeah, it's crazy. It is crazy how like that does change over time. And it just seems like once a band does it, that does it decently or well, or that record or whatever is also that also does well, sells well or whatever. It's like all of a sudden everyone's like right over to that kind of tuning, that sound. And then regurgitated a million times, but
yeah,
it is the music industry.
Yeah, E standard, drop D, drop C was like, whoa. And then you're like, drop B, oh, you're an edgy kid because you're not using drop C. Then it went to seven strings, you know, corn and all that stuff with A standard or drop A or A standard. And it's just disgusting since then. It's now I hear bands and I actually can't hear the guitar frequencies. Like, I don't know.
I think also the fact that guitar tone has come such a long way in metal. And the clarity is at a new level, where you can actually hear what the fuck is going on in these low tunes.
Sometimes, yeah.
I mean, no one bothered to try to tune that low back when metal tones were still primitive, because you can't hear shit. What's the point? And now the production aspect has caught up. And if you listen to like the new Amir record, which, you know, there's just some insanely low, unholy tunings, but... it comes through clear. You know, you couldn't have done that 10 years ago, I don't think.
True.
And that's, I agree, I buy a lot of CDs and I started collecting CDs again as a, you know, fucking boomer or whatever you want to call it. But I just started buying CDs, and it's so, and a lot of these CDs were like, you know, instrumental to my like youth and my like, you know, my journey down the hardcore and metal avenue. But I go back and listen to some of that shit, and I'm like, oh my God, this sounds like it was recorded in a tin can somewhere. And it just sounds so bad. Yeah. And it's
like that.
It's crazy. Like, even okay, like I bought Unearth the Oncoming Storm again. Right. And it was like $2. I was like, of course I'll just get that. I put it in and I remember, fuck dude, this is like I hadn't heard it in so long. I was like, this is a great album. Cause I kind of stopped listening to Unearth shortly after that CD came out, unfortunately. But I was like, damn, it isn't quite there with what I'm used to, obviously, because it was recorded in the early 2000s. So it's like, man, it's such a bummer that such a lot of music that is really close to like your heart, my heart, or whoever's heart, we don't even know what it really sounds like. You know what I mean? Because it was recorded
horribly.
It's funny
how much we just dealt with back when there wasn't a lot to listen to, and you know, we were scrounging for heavy music. Like, I thought shit sounded fine, you know, when I was in high school listening to like Pray for Plagues, Bring Me the Horizon. And if you listen to that record now, you're like, ugh, it sounds harsh on my ears. But that's all we had. You know, metal bands didn't have money to go to a multi-million dollar studio. And back then, you couldn't get a larger than life sound without going to a multi-million dollar studio. And now people can do that shit from their room. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know who does that. Yeah, that's
so the game has changed, and you don't have to put up with low standards of production anymore. And so just in like 10, 15 years, the standard has become so high. You return to those albums that got you into the genre, and you wonder how you ever got into the genre in the first place.
Yeah. Like I haven't put on Hatebreed's Perseverance in quite some time. But part of me doesn't want to because I remember it a certain way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. And I'm not saying it's all bad and it all aged terribly because that's not true.
Most of it did, though. You're not wrong.
Definitely some like the old moldy stuff. You'd rather just keep the nostalgia goggles on.
Yeah.
Fuck it up.
It is kind of a bummer. All right. Before
getting
we...
old, man.
You're telling me, Andy.
We're all aging, my friend.
So before we get into the next little segment here where I just ask you a bunch of random questions, one of the bands you're in, Andy, Monuments, I was thinking prior that you guys released an album, but that's Currents. I was thinking of the Currents album from last year. But you guys did release a single this year. What?
We just did, yeah.
Yeah, Dead Net. What is on the horizon for Movements?
For Movements, not sure, but for Monuments.
Monuments.
That's all good.
Hey,
man.
It'll happen, bro. I told you.
I'm
before.
I'm just roasting you. What was I going to say? Monuments. We got an album coming out. We're working on a full length. What is it? I guess it would be M4 is what they're calling it. Those singles we put out, not part of the album, just sort of tantalizers.
Actually?
And then those won't be on the album.
Is that including the one from 2020 as well?
Yeah, both of those were just one-off singles. Do have like a full album that we're working on, new music coming. It's probably going to take another year. Those guys be neurotic as shit, and so do I. So,
and is that something that you got to deal with the same way, as in like sending stuff back and forth because they don't live, you know, in Maryland?
Well, yeah, and the thing is, you have to clear it with four other guys instead of just me and Nick for Termina. So with Monuments, it takes a lot longer for stuff to be agreed upon, and you got to wait for this person to finish their stuff, and then this person to finish their stuff, and there's a chain of command, and we're all a bit fucked in the head. So,
well, it's good to be kind of neurotic. You know what I mean? Especially for art's sake.
Yes. Yeah. It goes hand in hand with being creative. And it can be to your benefit and to your detriment. You have to try to reel that in. Me and Nick are the same way with Termina. Yeah. He's got to deal with my craziness and I got to deal with his. And if you can harness that power, then you can make something sick.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. As long as friendship
before anything.
Right?
Yeah.
Best friends for any. The best friends for him.
Well, I will say that the singles I heard prior to the album release that, just dropped yesterday or 5 days ago, a month ago, whatever, I enjoyed them. And this was, I didn't know really much about you, Andy. I just kind of followed Nick for the last handful of years. So that's why I was, it's pretty cool shit. Is it just you guys? Like, is that the team? Like, you handle everything? I know it's DIY, so yeah, it is you guys recording and writing and everything like that, but do you guys, have a management team? Do they help you with other kind of shit? Yeah, okay. Well,
Nick
good
is
to
our
find
manager. He was a marketing major, and he knows his shit. I mean, the music speaks volumes, but his marketing and networking skills are invaluable and have changed the game with this band for real.
It's just us. We do have the
a videographer.
Yeah, he helps us a lot. We had two videographers. The first one was Alex, and then the second one was Patrick. He did all the rest of our videos. And he's a gem. You know, I like to call him our unofficial third member because literally, like, the videos he can do with us in white walls is insane with our iPhones. Like, I can't fathom how you can create that, but.
Yeah, I would say no team, just a handful of talented friends that help us sometimes.
Is that something
we throw money at them?
Is that something that you kind of want to continue doing going forward? So not as a monetary benefit, but like, do you guys think it's easier / better to get your art across in a certain way and in the way that you want it to be presented?
I think so in that sense, as well as just in terms of, like, me and Andy already have spent so long working on our, like, relationship and dynamics with how we work, you know, musically and all that. And we've kind of got it in a good place with when we finish the albums. Like, we kind of know how to work around this and how to send each other stuff and what to send and what kind of style we want. Whereas, like, as soon as we'd add another variable to that, it's just, like, a whole new... It's like the process kind of all over again. If it was like an actual member in that sense, or even like a person part of like the full team. But in terms of like session people, like, I think me and Andy are both like super into, you know, even for the next album, like probably hiring someone to actually mix it. That's not just us. Probably hiring a session drummer to actually do all the drums up. So it's not, you know, robot noises and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like the first album being totally DIY was a matter of necessity for us. And, it was just like easier than trying to assemble a team with no money and or sell our souls to a label or whatever. I think like it's a great breakout moment that will set the stage for the future and allow us to choose a producer for the next record versus doing it all ourselves. Like that's the stuff that I would like to outsource moving forward so we can just focus on being more creative. But as far as like, management and marketing and you know, being your own label, we're still going to do that ourselves.
We want to definitely have control of that and all the creativeness and all that, and I think that's probably what we would want it to stay for a while, because you know, especially trust. Like, I know me and Andy can trust each other, and you add another variable, it's like, well, we hope they don't get canceled and ruin the whole band. You know, it's like, especially
nowadays,
right?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, before I do the rapid part, you brought up Tim Lambesis earlier, Andy.
Lambesis goat.
Are you going to join in on the mental health talk that he did today or is going to do or something?
I saw, isn't that August Burns Red? Isn't it Jake from August Burns Reds?
It's his, like, gym. It's his gym that offers gym. Some kind of mental health situation along with it. But
I've only
Jake
just
and
glanced
Tim are,
at
are
it,
big.
And I was like, "Wow, I am shocked." And that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. They seem to be very tight. Jake and Tim, and to each his own, obviously, but. We've reached out to Tim to be on the podcast, but obviously for many reasons that have
I think that Lamb Goat and Tim Lambesis have had a tumultuous relationship.
I don't know what you're talking about, Andy. I think it's
in
been
years
very
past.
I think we just support the news. It's the
not
ecosystem it, of Lamb Goat that maybe he has an issue with.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
All right.
Jesus Christ, isn't that the That's the whole thing, isn't it?
Well, for him, for them.
Not anymore.
Yeah. Anyway, so give me three albums, boys, that you really loved in 2020, and then give me one album that's already been released this year.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, God.
I can't.
Yeah, you can. Come on now.
Okay, this year for me, Era smacked everything.
Cool.
Last year, what came out last year?
I'm having a hard time right now.
Did Loathe come out last year?
Yeah,
2019.
No, Loathe came out.
Loathe smacked. Did Trivium come out last year? I think so, right? 2020.
Yes, or late in 2019.
But I would say Trivium anyways. Okay. That was a really good record. And then, Crystal Lake?
They had one.
That might have came out early last year.
Or maybe I think in North Lane. I don't know.
Oh, North. Wait. No, that was like 2017 Alien North Lane, right? for 2018?
I don't know. I just know what's posted on
the years are just sort of this last year away just a blur at this point.
Termina!
There it is.
dude, look, man, this sounds bad, but I have been like very thirsty for music that makes me feel anything lately.
It's okay.
Like, the older I get, the more jaded and cynical I become about heavy music. And I don't know, man. Like, I'm stuck in the past. I've been listening to like the same albums from 2010 for
you didn't like years. You didn't like Afterburner? I can't believe you're saying I can say Afterburner if you like Dance Gavin Dance. Out of all the albums,
look,
that
man,
released,
I do. I liked it. Okay.
I think that was a good one for them, and I haven't really been a big fan of
that
them.
Stuff. I like all the new DGD, but my heart lies in the old stuff. And I'm I love DGD so much. Their success is immense. They're insanely talented. All very talented people.
You just like
my
Johnny
favorite
Craig?
Version of that band was Kurt Travis, and when he was the singer. So Happiness was my favorite DGD album. I also really liked Downtown Battle Mountain 2 with Johnny Craig.
Is that the one with Lemon Meringue?
No, that's is number Downtown one? Battle Mountain 1, which I also loved. So, like, my heart belongs to those albums, but I still fuck with the new DGD. And, you know, it's just a different thing. And I'm just old, and that's what that is. I don't know, man. Vale of Maya is sick. I'll just tell you the bands that I've loved lately.
Go ahead.
And Volumes is sick, and The Contortionist is sick. Good Tiger is fucking sick. Tesseract.
Yeah, they're a band that I kind of get into more as I get older.
Right. Mm. Yeah. Same here.
And Between the Buried and Me, too. I
Between the Buried and Me, fucking awesome.
I've gotten such a hard-on for that band, even in the last handful of years. I've always followed them their entire time. And then when I had them on the podcast, I started listening to them leading up. I started listening to like the back half of their catalog that, you know, I didn't really pay attention to it that often. It's like their best shit. And then it's like, I'll just put them on YouTube and then they'll play. And then I'll like listen to shit. I'm like, what band is that? Leprous? What is that? You know? And then I'm like looking at Leprous and then I'm like, oh, Tesseract. And then it's all like this weird prog shit and with weird vocals. And so it's, you know, it's fun.
Yeah, I've been a BT BAM fan since Colors came out. I think that was like my awakening of prog music, actually, or prog metal. Because I hadn't really listened to Dream Theater that much. I was like younger. And when I heard BT BAM, I was like, whoa, this kind of music, holy shit. And then that's what brought me back to the Dream Theaters and stuff like that, which influenced BT BAM. And,
right.
Meshuggah too. It's not like I knew about Meshuggah before Periphery. I had to get into Periphery before.
Me too.
I realized that there was like, you know, the forefathers.
It's okay. Sometimes you just don't know. Yeah. Or again, it's recorded shittily. Like I've tried to listen to a lot of like early 90s metalcore sometimes. And I'm like, ugh, it just doesn't come through because there's like no bass. You know, you can't hear any of the bass. You can't.
Yeah.
There's certain things that aren't there.
You have to be like a fan and then go back through these discographies. And if you're not like a huge fan of the band, you're not even going to want to bother with that shit.
No, I get it. Andy, are you, is there a fire behind you or do you have like a small, small
dude, it's slowly
diffuser?
Burning down. It's just a humidifier.
Okay, just making sure. I see it now,
just
but I didn't.
Because I get a sore throat. So.
No, I get it, man. You're both
it just keeps things nice and humid.
Well, boys, we've reached that time where we are going to cut it, but it's great having you both on. Obviously, this isn't the only time that you
could ever be on.
Thanks for having us, dude.
No, you're more than welcome. And,
love Lamb Goat. Always been a huge fan. This is really cool.
Well, in about a month, you'll be able to see yourself on it again.
Oh, shit. Can't wait for the – hopefully that I can bring the Sheetrock meme back and whatever. Andy Sizek is stoked.
Yeah. Maybe you get a couple comments like that. You never know. Fingers crossed, hopefully. All right. Was there anything else that you guys want to plug out other than your album that came out already?
Termina Dysphoria, out now. Check it.
Well, and also each of your channels, each of your YouTube channels will be listed in the show notes/description. I got that from you.
Yeah. Right? You know, if you like what we're about, Go check out Nick Nocturnal. Go check out Andy Sizek.
You don't need to check out mine.
Don't like what we're about. Head to our Twitch channels when we're live and post really offensive stuff. And yeah, that'll be cool too. Whatever you guys feel.
Make the mod work. Make the mods work.
Make the mod work. There you go. Yeah.
All right, dudes. Well, Andy, I wish you all the luck in movements, and Nick, all the luck in YouTube.
Me too, man. Hopefully someday I'll be in movements and we can make some movements.
No, with my
I'm going to have a movement in a little bit after I leave.
Nice. Nice. Well, you got to stay regular. All right.
Thank you, David. No problem, I appreciate you, man.
It was great having you on.
Yeah.
This is Chris DeMakes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake and host of Chris DeMakes, a podcast. A songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of the Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, man, I gotta hear that. Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Chris DeMakes, a podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.